Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to buy a belief system, please. Some set of ideas that'll back up the way I want to live.
Good. Well, we have a few on special today.
Cool.
How about this one? Mm-hmm. Anti-intellectual pragmatism. That's for people who think, anybody who thinks about things is weird, you just do what works and get on with it.
Okay. I'd like it to sound a little bit more educated. I want to look like I've thought about it.
All right. Anything appeals to you here?
How about that one?
This one, right. Secular humanism. Yeah. That's been popular for a couple of hundred years.
What does it do?
Oh, that's for people who want to believe that we have it all together. You know, ultimate confidence in human progress, no God or supernatural stuff.
Right. Yeah, I like that. That's got a gutsy, independent sort of feel to it. You know, like I'm a modern, educated, scientific person. I don't need religion for a crutch.
Then we can use some of this scientism.
Ooh.
This pushes science beyond the bounds of a purely scientific study of the universe. It tries to use science to explain ultimates such as the meaning of life, love, the existence of God, which science isn't actually equipped to handle, but still.
Cool. Now, I don't want to look like I'm naive about the future, though. Like, I want to look like I've got some sort of sense of caution.
We can add a touch of modern pessimism.
Cool.
Turn around, please. I'm running out of shoulder. All right, we'll do the other one. Modern pessimism. There we are. And we can add some environmentalism.
Ooh.
And then you can look like you're concerned about the natural world.
Cool. Okay, but I don't want to look like I'm sort of touchy-feely. You know, I'm not some sort of hippie dropout. I'm out there, you know, on the cutting edge. I've got a career. I'm a person of action. I'm in the real world. I want to survive, rise in the great struggle of life.
Ah, yes, we can add a touch or two of social Darwinism.
Yeah?
Yes, the struggle for existence. The strong survive as the weak fall by the wayside. I know. You can claim to have an aggressive type A personality, and that will justify trampling other people underfoot.
Cool. Although, I don't want to be unpopular. I want to look like I've got the human touch, otherwise women won't be attracted to me.
Right. We'll cover that with a veneer of old-fashioned philanthropism.
What's that?
It's giving money to charities on television.
Okay. Now, I've been thinking about the secular humanism thing. I don't want absolutely no possibility of any God. Like, I want to be able to call on something if I get in a tight spot. So maybe I should save something for a rainy day.
Like when you die?
Yeah, die, yeah. Mm.
Theism, you need theism.
What is it?
That is some sort of belief in an active God.
Is it socially acceptable?
Yes, so long as you choose the right type and don't get too involved.
Right.
How about Christian theism, the idea of a loving creator God who comes and dies to save us?
No, don't want that Christianity stuff. It's not real. I mean, Jesus Christ probably didn't even exist. I saw this show on TV that proved it. And anyway, the Bible, I mean, who believes the Bible nowadays? I never even bothered to read it.
Right. Critical rejection based on the mass media.
But I want it to sound educated. I want it to look like I've thought about it.
We can call it postmodern scepticism.
Oh, no, that there sounds good.
Tell you what, yes, we'll put this one here.
Yeah, yeah.
You can say you're a free thinker. You're not interested in churchy doctrines. No, you are a deist, not a theist, and you believe in a God that is a distant God and not a God who's involved in the world.
Cool, deist.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, but can it look a little bit like mystical? Like, I don't want to get too specific about this God thing. I want something vague that I can keep at arm's length.
Pantheism. The idea that God is the universe itself. There's the Hindu type Brahma, a distant God, too distant, abstract for us to relate
yeah,
to.
Yeah, I want the Hindu one, because the East is Oriental and that's all spiritual.
Right, yeah. Right. All right, so which Hindu path to enlightenment do you wish to pursue? We've got Yunani Yoga, Karma Yoga, Bhaktism, Shaktri, Tantric cults.
I don't know, I just want something Hinduish.
Right, how about Hatha Yoga? Hatha Yoga, yes. That's very popular in the West and you can always just use it for exercises.
Okay. Does it mean I go to Nirvana when I die?
Nirvana? That's Buddhism?
Oh. But I like the thought of Nirvana, you know, like a heaven that you go to.
Oh, it's not a place. It's a state of mind. Ultimately, it is nothingness, just complete freedom from everything. You cease to exist, blank, gone.
Oh. but I like the sound, Nirvana. You know, it's got that mystical ring.
Right, right. Well, then you could try popular village Buddhism, because they have lots of heavens.
Yeah, that's the sort of Nirvana I'm talking about, that one. Yeah,
okay, I tell you what, we can send you on a tour of Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
You can go shopping in Singapore, uh-huh. stay in the Bangkok Hilton, uh-huh. visit a few temples, and then we can say you've been on a spiritual pilgrimage.
I can say I definitely felt a sense of something.
Yes, but to be safe, we'll say that you're an agnostic,
uh-huh.
Because you're unconvinced by any evidence for or against a god.
Yeah, because I want to look open-minded and tolerant. I don't want to be accused of being exclusive and narrow-minded on, I mean, like, all religions are more or less the same in the end anyway, aren't they?
You can quote Ramakrishna.
Who's she?
He is a Hindu sage who said all religions are valid.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
There.
So this is looking good. So
it's good. You're happy with that, are you?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Okay. Now, is there anything else you should look at? Are you open to everything equally?
Yeah, yeah. I think I want to be sort of like open-minded, because I mean, like, nobody can preach to me. Like, it's my democratic right to believe what I want. Okay, that's my right. I'll fight for that. And I mean, in the end, there's no such thing as right and wrong anyway, as long as you're sincere.
Ah, relativism, no absolutes. That will cover it all nicely. With this, you can accept almost anything and never be accused of being narrow-minded or exclusive.
Cool.
There, look at that. Oh,
how's it look?
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. Let's read you. Come, see if you're happy with this. So, this is you. You are a secular humanist, and you deny Christianity and Jesus and reject the Bible, which you haven't read. You have confidence in the progress of modern science, and you glory in the achievements of humankind, but you have a sense of crisis about the future. You are an environmentalist who values the natural world. Ah. Now, there could be a link there with the Christian idea of the value of a created world. We'll have to ignore that link.
We'll
move on. All right, now, you are a social Darwinian. You're wanting to be involved in the free enterprise struggle, but you embrace some convenient bits of charitable philanthropism. Now, we'll have to ignore the fact that philanthropism is based on the Christian idea of valuing other humans. We'll ignore that connection. We'll move on. All right, now, you are aware of an indefinable something like a pantheistic Hindu Brahma presence, but you are also skeptical and agnostic, but you still want something to be there in case you die. However, you won't want the rest of Hinduism because it suggests the world is an illusion, and that could clash with you wanting to be an environmentalist. Right, we'll move on. Now, you want to go to Nirvana and you like Buddhism, but you won't like the rest of Buddhism because it says you should detach yourself from the world and that could threaten your career path. But none of it matters anyway because all religions are okay.
Except Christianity.
Right, right. Now, you want to be educated and look like you've considered all angles, but you won't have anyone preach to you. And finally, there's no such thing as right or wrong, but you'll fight for your right to believe what you want because that's the right thing. Well, what do you think?
It's okay, I suppose.
What do you mean it's okay, I suppose? This is your whole attitude to life. This is what drives all your behaviours, how you see other people, how you see yourself, how you treat people. Do you believe it or don't you?
Look, I don't really want to get involved in any of them too much. I've got a very comfortable lifestyle here. I don't want to change. Will this package protect me or not?
Oh, yes. With this package, you can continue to live a Western consumer-based lifestyle in complete comfort, with no thoughts that you might have missed out on anything. With this package, you'll be completely protected against having to ask any of the deeper questions of any belief systems or religions.
Good. What's it cost?
What?
Well, I have to pay for it, won't I?
Oh, yes. One way or another.
However, looked round and noticed how different everyone is. If you'll have, you'll see that we don't all look alike. I don't just mean sort of turn to your wife and husband and go, you're a boy, I'm a girl. He's so right. No, what I'm talking about is the fact that Australia is one of the most multicultural societies on earth. We have nearly one in four people who live here were actually born overseas. Now, the upside of that is we've got all these delicious different cuisines. I'm partial towards Indian and Chinese. But it also means that in the community, there's all these different ideas, cultural practices, and religions. So the question of how to choose a religion, or none at all, it couldn't come at a more relevant time. Because when you're out in the community, you're going to bump into people who are agnostics, atheists, you know, Hindus, Muslims, some Mormons, a couple of morons, Jews, Jedi Knights, and even poor people who worship the Broncos. So, today's message is all about how to choose a religion or none at all. But, and this just to illustrate it, we've got these doors on stage that people have painted, and they're just kind of to show you that in life, there are a lot of doors you can walk through in terms of what you believe. There's a lot of choices. And one of the questions our society is asking is, well, do you need to choose at all? Because perhaps all these different paths just lead to the same place. And this view is called pluralism, and it's just this idea that, big word, but it just means all religions and major worldviews like atheism are all equally valid, and there's no way of judging which is right or which is wrong. And this is the thing I hear when I share my faith the most. There's no real need to choose because it's okay whatever you believe. So I want to look at this pathway called pluralism and show why I submit it's the wrong way. It doesn't work. And then Dave B is going to come up and he's going to look at how the right path to choosing what you believe in life is actually a process you can go through for deciding what you want to believe. And he's going to look at how Jesus, as such a unique historical figure, his life can be a really good place to start in deciding what you want to believe. So whether you're a spiritual seeker, or perhaps you've finished the science course and you're going to run into people, family and friends, who are spiritual seekers and grappling the big questions in life, like where did I come from, where am I going, why am I here? This is the sort of message for you or for those people. So maybe hang on to the outline or get the DVD if you ever run into someone who's grappling with how do I decide what I believe with all these different options. But first, let's go to what I want to look at today, which is this path of pluralism. Now, there's lots of issues involved, but when you distill it down, four things come out. We'll just go through them one at a time really simply. Okay, the first one, which you heard in the drama, was that people will often say, it doesn't matter what you believe, just as long as you're sincere. So it doesn't matter if you're a Muslim or a Christian or a Buddhist, just as long as you're sincere in your beliefs. Now, I hear that actually surprisingly a lot. But the thing is, you'd never hear that said of something like science or maths or the personal hygiene of the person sitting next to you or a historical event like, say, an episode of genocide. Think, you know, Rwanda, Cambodia. Because there's lots of tyrants and dictators throughout history who've sincerely believed that they should annihilate a race of people. But I think we can agree that that's wrong. Or for hundreds of years, people sincerely believed the Earth is flat. And I apologize to any Flat Earth Society members who are here today. That's wrong. The Earth's a beautiful sphere. So, of course, sincerity clearly isn't everything. Now, sincerity is vitally important. Don't get me wrong. No one likes a hypocrite. But it's not the be-all and the end-all. So don't think, if you can't say it's all you need to believe is, doesn't matter what you believe, sorry, as long as you're sincere. If you can't say that of science or maths or history, it doesn't seem fair to apply it to religion alone. A second issue that comes out is in this pluralism discussion, that all paths are valid, is people will often say, look, Brendan, it doesn't really matter what you believe, as all the religions are pretty much the same. And backing that belief up is that they often do look a little bit similar. You know, they've often got the same sort of teachings, you know, be loving, no murdering, no stealing. And they've often got similar things like people meeting in a room. There's often music and singing, some holy books, perhaps a bit of prayer and meditation. But the thing is, these really are just superficial similarities because at their heart, each religion and the major worldviews, they're all substantively different. I mean, a Christian and a Muslim who believes in a God of some kind, they're very different from a Buddhist and an atheist who don't believe in a God. And you really can't reconcile or mesh those together. Now, at this point, we get to the third one. People will say this, okay, I grant you the religions are different. You know, no God, a God, that's a difference. But perhaps they're like different paths that lead to the same place. You've all heard that expression, all roads lead to Rome, yeah? It's because in the ancient Roman Empire, all the different roads through Europe generally wound up in the capital of Rome. Even though they go through different countries and different paths, they all get to the same place. And so people often say, religion's like that. Different paths, all equally valid, arriving at the same place. Now, when someone says that to me, and I really hear it a lot, I generally will say, well, why should I believe that? You see, just saying that all religions are equally valid, that's actually just an assertion. It doesn't prove anything. It's not an argument. It's not evidence. Now, what they will then do, I hear this again, I've heard this like 3 times in the last year, this analogy of how a group of blind people like Steve Irwin just wannabes, they're like, they find this elephant and they start groping and grasping at it. Perhaps that's a bit unsafe, but still, that's what they're doing. And one guy grabs the leg. Have you guys heard this story before? Yep. And he goes, the elephant, it's round and thick like a tree. Another guy grabs the trunk and goes, you know, you're wrong, it's hollow and long. And the third guy grabs the tail and goes, you're both wrong, it's like thin and flexible like a cord or a vine. And we, the listener, straight away realize that all of them are right, but all of them are wrong. You see, they all see only part of the picture. So none of the blind men should be telling the other ones, you're wrong, I'm right. And so the illustration concludes, religions are the same. They all see only part of the spiritual truth. But that gets me thinking. What would it take for you to know that all the religions see only part of the spiritual truth? Well, it's just like the blind people analogy. The only way you can know that all those blind people up there are just grabbing part of the elephant is if you can see the whole elephant. So you can see the whole picture. So the only way you can know that all the religions see only part of the truth is if you assume you see the whole truth. But that's the very thing you just said no one has. You can't go, all religions see only part of the spiritual truth except me. I see the whole spiritual truth. It's called a self-defeating statement because if it's true, it's also false. And so it's pretty easy to see that all the different religions have different views about, is there a God at all? If there is a God, is there an afterlife? If so, how do you get there? And you just can't mesh those beliefs together, and they can't lead to the same place. Another analogy that's used is that this mountain analogy, that the religions are like climbing different ways up a mountain, you know, different ridge lines, things look different, but they all get to the same summit. But the real question is, what are you going to call that summit? And if you call it sort of a God, well, what sort of God? Because, like I said, Buddhists and Hindus don't believe in God. Sorry, atheists and Buddhists. Hindus believe in millions of gods, and some people believe in one God, like Muslims, or a Trinitarian God, like our God, three in one. And instantly you can see it. They're all so different. I think a better way of understanding the religions is to realize they're climbing completely different mountains. So sure, in the early days, as they're walking along the ground, there's a bit of common teaching, common ground, you know, no murdering. But as soon as you get into the distinctives, they're all going to totally different places. And one of the issues that sort of has come out with this idea that all the religions are equally valid is that our society is sort of now teaching, and you should just keep your religious views private because they're all equally valid. Let's not argue for them in public. It's kind of like that saying, you know, about Tony Abbott, keep your rosaries off my ovaries. That's the sort of idea behind it. I didn't coin the term. All right. But that's what our society is moving towards, just wanting to keep your religious views private. Here's why it doesn't work. It is impossible. Because our religious views, they're our deepest held beliefs. And you can't just jettison your deepest held beliefs and leave them at the door. So I have deep held beliefs about the purpose of marriage. And I'm sure everyone else here does. For example, if someone said to me, Brendan, are you okay with polygamy? I'd say, no, I am not okay with polygamy. I'm hoping everyone here is in agreement with that. Polygamy seems like a mistake, having more than one wife or husband. How could you leave that belief at the door? Well, the fact that I think that humans are made in God's image and are valuable, and therefore I really care about the global AIDS epidemic, how do I leave that at the door? You just can't leave your deepest held beliefs at the door. Instead, what I think can work is real tolerance. It is possible to live in this multicultural society with our differences and get along. When you really care for someone, you should be able to respectfully disagree when you think that they're wrong. You see, it's one thing to tolerate another religion's existence and their practices. That's okay. But it's another thing entirely to intellectually tolerate them by just agreeing that they're all the same or all equally valid. That's going way too far. So the present attempt to sort of keep the peace amongst everyone by having us quarantine our religious beliefs to our private life, it's impossible, but it also takes tolerance too far. The fourth point I'll deal with, that is often said in this pluralism discussion, is that, well, Christians are accused of being arrogant or exclusive because they believe that Jesus provides the only way to God and to heaven. And you know what? It's true that it's very difficult for spiritual seekers to deal with this. The fact is, Jesus did make some very big exclusive claims. But in fairness to us, it really isn't a logical attack because everyone's exclusive. Muslims are radically theologically exclusive. Their afterlife is only for them. Even Hinduism, the very, you know, key religion of many roads leading to God, they are uncompromising, will not give up at least two or three things like karma, you've all heard that, and reincarnation. They won't disbelieve that. So I don't think it's fair to say that Christians are exclusive because everyone is. You see, truth, by definition, is exclusive. Anytime you say something is true, you mean the opposite of it is false. So, for example, if Dave B were to follow me up here and make the claim that he is, in fact, a boy, he would instantly be seeking to disprove the counterclaim that he's actually a girl. I'll leave that to Dave, but that's a truth claim. He can't go, oh, perhaps I'm both. Yeah, that'll work. No, it just doesn't. A truth claim means you are excluding that which must be false. Now, that said, just because you think you have the truth doesn't mean you'll communicate it in a way that's loving or kind. I mean, we've all seen the judges on Australian Idol say truthful things, but in a harsh and hurtful manner. So when you've got to communicate the truth, you need to do it in a way that's undergirded by love, or it can make what you're saying repulsive, even if it's right. And so an example of how Christians can do this is to realize you don't have to dismiss as false everything in all the other religions. You see, we can engage our religious and irreligious neighbors in dialogue and debate, and we can celebrate truth, beauty, and goodness wherever it's found. You see, if Buddha says it's better to give than to receive, that's true, and Jesus said it as well. You see, all truth comes from God, so you can celebrate it wherever you find it. Now, yeah, ultimately, I believe that these other world religions have their last propositions wrong, like what they really stand for. But that doesn't mean I can't learn a little bit from them. I mean, I can learn a little bit about sensitivity to suffering from Buddhists, or about societal courtesy from Confucianism. So you can celebrate truth wherever you find it in building bridges. Now, before Dave comes up, I think I've shown that not all religious paths can be equally valid, and they can't all lead to the same place. But the last question is, well, do I need to choose anyway? Perhaps I don't care enough to decide. And that might sound a little bit sort of, but that's what our society's at. Most people I talk to sort of only care a little bit about spiritual beliefs. They might adopt a few sort of spiritual beliefs, like an accessory to life, call it like, you know, an Oprah spirituality, but it's not really at the core of their existence. So what do you say to them? Well, the reason that our beliefs matter is that they can have consequences, especially if you have a false belief. The person who suffers is usually you. If you have a false belief that drink driving and speeding is safe and you do it, the person will probably suffer. And it's the same thing whether you're choosing a life partner or choosing a vocation, a career, or choosing a religion. What you believe really does matter, and truth really does count. So I'll just invite now Dave B to come up and just look at how do you decide what you believe and why Jesus is a good place to start in deciding what you believe.
Well, Brendan's done a great job of looking at how we live in a world with so many religious parts. But like, which one do you choose, if any? Sometimes we're a lot like Benny in the clip. You know, we've taken on all the options and we're hoping that in the mix, maybe one of the paths that we've chosen is the right path when we're in a tight spot. But as Brendan explored, pluralism, just saying everything's equally valid or they're all the same, it's really a lazy way out. It doesn't deal with the truth claims of any particular belief. It's just an excuse to never explore in the first place. It's a barrier to searching. So I need you to know that the search for truth, it's not a pleasure cruise. It takes persistence. It takes hard work. So right up front, whether it's you who's searching or whether it's a friend of yours, you've got to ask yourself, how committed am I to really searching out what's true? And then how committed am I to follow the evidence where it seems to lead, to actually live it out? Am I genuinely searching, or is this just some type of barrier as an excuse to really engaging belief at all and having some type of center that's bigger than myself? So if pluralism is the wrong path, it's a dead-end door. and maybe you're a little bit skeptical of that one, then what's the right path to discern between the various doors? Because it's tricky, right? So many options. And this was what Lily had as a dilemma when we started emailing each other late last year. Now, Lily is a 20-something, very intelligent Harvard student. And we got in a dialogue about beliefs. And basically she said, I'm spiritual, but I am not religious. Like it's a four-letter word, you know, religious, mm-mm. And I said, well, why is that? You know, what keeps you from committing to any belief system, or especially Christianity? What holds you back? And as an intelligent Harvard student can tend to do, she responded not with a direct answer, but with a metaphor. And it was a very beautifully written piece. And she basically said that the search for religious truth is like a labyrinth. You know, where you've got a huge maze and there's no clear or right way through it. So I want you to picture a large labyrinth, if you will. And the only way to advance is to ask questions. Now, some people don't even bother asking the most foundational questions to human existence, so they remain outside. But the kind of questions that propel you inwards are things like, why do I exist? What's the meaning of life? How can I tell right from wrong? Where do I go when I die? Have you engaged these questions? Have you started thinking about them? So some people never enter, and our society tends to suppress these kind of questions. It says it doesn't matter, and we've just got so much noise. So we ignore it. We ignore it until our family falls apart. We ignore it until your partner dumps you. We ignore it until your best friend is suicidal. And then all of a sudden we're aware of this existential angst that unless I've got answers to these kind of questions, my life is meaningless. So perhaps we start to engage these questions. We press on. And then Lily described what you first enter in the labyrinth. She said it's this large, spacious lobby. And she called it the lobby of simplistic answers. Just follow the crowd. What the majority says is right. You pretend you're engaging the questions, but really you're just going for the easiest option. And that doesn't necessarily satisfy. You've got to start to answer the questions for yourself. What do I really think? Not just what's convenient, but what do I really believe about this? So you press on. You ask these questions and you start to enter particular doors. And as you go through each door to explore, you find that every room has its own appeal. Some have piercing blue light, others have a warm golden light. And so you're starting to engage these rooms, but how do you compare the rooms? They have their own type of wonder. They answer different questions. So in Lily's words, she finished up like this. She said, which room held the truth? And how do you know with people stopped in every room where there's always another door? Can you feel her dilemma? This is our cultural dilemma. Lily wondered what might convince her that one of those doors is the door. How would you advise Lily? If Lily was your friend, perhaps you are just like Lily. You're articulate, but you're feeling hopelessly lost in the religious labyrinth. Maybe you're wondering if there's a way forward, if there's a process forward. I really believe there is. So we're going to explore that process. To start with, however, you've got to avoid the extremes. For instance, none of us knows everything. Therefore, I mean, how can you know everything? We're limited, we're biased. So some people say, well, you've got to know everything before you can believe. But none of us do. And then on the other side, even though we don't know everything fully, nor are we totally in the dark. I mean, we're bumping into something every day, call it reality if you will. And if you want to successfully navigate life, then you need to come up with some explanation that makes better sense than other ones. So you need that. So the solution isn't on one side to say, until you prove it 100%, I'm not going to believe. Because your present beliefs that you hold don't meet that criteria. All right? That doesn't make sense. Only mathematics gives absolute proof. But on the other side, it's not to say, well, I'm just going to give up the search or I'm just going to follow my feelings. That doesn't make a lot of sense either. What I'm suggesting is the right attitude. And that attitude is to be open, but critical. Be open. Be open to the fact, you know, to everyone's experiences and stories, to the fact that every room may be richer than you presently know. Pay it that respect. But at the same time, be critical. Now, I don't mean critical in the sense of harsh. I mean evaluative. You've got to start to evaluate each system, including your own. Otherwise, you might overlook the errors, the problems, even the sicknesses of every given option. So open and critical. Try it on. Still, what we need is a process from here on in. So let me suggest to you three verbs that will guide you in this search. Understand, ask, and assess. to understand a belief system as your starting point, then you've got to ask the right questions of it, and then you've got to humbly assess each option and see which of the live alternatives makes the most sense and have the guts to commit to actually living that rather than putting it on the back burner, to face it squarely. So let's start off with understand. You need to understand what the various religious alternatives and the non-religious options, like atheism, understand what they actually claim. Now, track down a good introduction to the religion written by a reputable scholar who's not trying to praise or condemn, they're trying to even-handedly and accurately explain a belief system. In your note outline, I've recommended John Dixon's A Spectator's Guide to World Religions. That's exactly what he's trying to do in that. That's an excellent book, 200 pages. Just start skimming it. It's written very simply. But before you explore all the various religious alternatives, can I encourage you to search out your own beliefs first? Now, that's not an indefinite thing where you keep going forever, but I mean, put in a time where you actually search it out. And for most of us here, that actually means searching out Jesus. You know, the average Australian wastes about 20 plus hours watching television and multimedia per week. I want to challenge you to put just 20 hours into searching out the foundations for Christianity. We've got a number of resources here afterwards that we'll be able to help you with if you want to come and find out maybe where's a good starting point. The top pick for me is to A, read the Gospel of Luke. We've got a kind of friendly version for that that you can have a look at. So the Gospel of Luke, and also Tim Keller's book, The Reason for God, is fantastic. Just take the time to read those two things. It's a starting point. And you know, as you do that, you really need to be open that there could be something else out there that perhaps you're not right. Perhaps there's more truth. Perhaps your own foundations are richer than you know. I'm amazed at the number of believers who dump their faith without really ever understanding what they're rejecting. If you're going to reject it, reject what it really is, not what you project it to be. Truly understand something before you reject it. Now, as you come to other religions to explore their other alternatives, follow a similar process. The aim is not to have a witch hunt and find all the hypocrites, right? Whether you're exploring Christianity or another belief system. Instead, watch the life and listen to the advice of a devout believer. Get a feel for the scriptures of that religion, whether it's the Bhagavad Gita, the Tripitaka, the Quran. Get a feel for where it's at and listen to some of the best critical scholars of these religions, how their own teachers explain it. Understand it properly. So, as I said, the first step, as you're being open and critical, is to say, what does this religion say about itself? Understand it within its own frame of reference. But as you seek to understand a religion, your next guiding verb is to ask. You need to ask the right questions to engage the kind of answers a particular worldview gives to the big questions in life. You could ask thousands of questions of different belief systems, but there's really two sets that I think are more important than anything else. The first set is, what does this worldview say about the material universe, physical matter? How does it explain phenomena like crashing cars, shining stars, barking dogs that assault our five senses every day? Now, it seems there's something out there, some universe, but how do we make sense of it? And the real question you need to direct, again, whether it's to Christianity or some other system, is this question. What is science? Science is the most powerful tool for understanding the universe, and every belief system will offer a different answer or shades of answers. For instance, is the universe an illusion? Therefore, science is really illusory as well. Or is the universe matter, but it's nothing more than matter? It's purely material. That's an anti-supernatural system. Or perhaps does the universe show signs of order and design because it was ordered by a divine designer? What makes the most sense of it? So what is science? Why does it work? What's it measuring? Now, the second set of questions is not so much about the universe out there. It's about the nature of humanity. What do we make of our creativity, our morality, our sense of justice, our bent toward religion and worship of something? What do we make of that? And if you want the heart of that, the key question, I think, is, what is love? Love is the most powerful driving force for humanity, but what is it? I mean, is it just a chemical response? Or is it a useful ethical choice that keeps our society running well, like a social contract? Or is it something real that binds us together because it reflects the very essence of our Creator? So what is science? What is love? any religious door or non-religious alternative you enter should have a really solid and believable answer to these two questions. But just like Lily and her labyrinth, how do I judge between the different answers that I hear? How do I discern between the rooms? I mean, beyond my preference for I'd really like this to be true because, gee, that's convenient. But beyond that, how do I know what is actually true? What I'm asking then is, what makes for a believable belief? How do you find truth? If you don't work this out beforehand, you're going to settle for an arbitrary criteria, such as a true religion is the one where the leader has the longest name, in which case Hinduism wins every single time. We just can't compete with them on that. So, you know, you need to work out your criteria beforehand because not all criteria are equal. This brings us to the third guiding verb, assess. You've got to choose your criteria and then equally apply them to every system. Don't weight it. Use them equally on each system. And then assess which seems to make the most sense and have the guts to live what you find rather than making an excuse to following the evidence where it seems to lead. Now, choosing criteria is really tricky, but let me suggest to you four that aren't specifically Christian, but have been discovered, not made up, discovered by philosophers over thousands of years across all belief systems to say, if you want to test a truth claim, whether it's a friend saying something to you, whether it's a car manufacturer telling you which is the best car, who you're going to marry as you weigh up the best of the live alternatives, whatever it is, these four criteria are actually really going to help you. So I'm going to race through them because we use these every Logos talk that we do. So first one, coherence. Does the belief hang together as one, or does it contradict itself at various points? Are there internal inconsistencies? Second, correspondence. Can this belief be verified as true, making claims that can be measured? Can you tell if it's true or false? Does it have an historical basis, or is it just an historical guess, an unhistorical projection? A philosophy, but nothing more. Third one, completeness. Does this belief explain not just a few phenomena, like why this stand remains upright, but does it actually explain all of life, the nature of the universe, the nature of humanity? Does it explain science, love, and the like? And the last one, I think, is really the icing on the cake, is livability. Can I live consistently with the beliefs that I claim to hold, or do I find myself doing things that inconsistently borrow from other systems in order to survive and thrive? For instance, when you go home at the end of the day and you say to your partner or you say to a spouse, I love you, are you saying that with an attitude that's consistent to perhaps your belief that love is just a chemical romance and it's nothing more? Or it's a social contract? Or are you saying it as though love is actually real and you would even die for that? Do you live consistently with the beliefs you claim to hold? So the idea is to use these criteria to compare belief systems to each other and see which makes the most sense overall, not just in truth, but in truth, goodness, and in beauty. I think we need to weigh all of that up. Now, it's important that you remember every belief, including the ones you presently hold, takes trust, takes faith. We're limited and biased. You've got to trust something and someone, and all of us do. We have presuppositions that cannot be proved at the base of our systems. That doesn't mean anything's just what you want it to be, but it means all of us have trust. So don't use a false excuse of, well, you have faith and I have facts. No, you have faith in your facts, right? What you need to actually do is to say, I'm not going to make this impossible standard of prove the whole thing and then I'll believe it. Instead, I'm going to say I'm going to weigh everything equally, which makes the most sense, and then I'll have the guts to follow it. Even as I continue the search, I'll enter a door. Now, I'm hoping you can see that up till this point, this process is not designed to just lead you to Christianity. This is actually an even-handed process that you could apply to any belief system out there, whether religious or non-religious. I can't offer you something better. And I do this open-handedly. But, you know, that said, I'm convinced that the more you search, the clearer the truth will shine. And ultimately, the truth that we seek and the truth that we need is not so much an infallible, watertight system as an infallible person whose life demands a response because of the beauty and the truth and the goodness with which it's been lived. And we're going to have a look at that now as to what that actually means. So if you've been tracking with Brendan and I, you should be a little bit skeptical of one door. That's the door of pluralism. But it doesn't actually work. It's often an excuse to protect us from engaging the real claims and committing to something beyond ourselves. And hopefully you're at least considering the process that I've described. But where to now? I mean, just like Lily's labyrinth, where do I go? I mean, every door that I enter seems to lead to six more options. And you know, it's really hard to know what propositions to believe. What truth claims will I believe? But I think that our greatest need is not so much for propositions as a person. What we really need is a guide to all the options that we can trust to walk with to help lead us through all of these alternatives. We need a starting point. And that's what I want to commend to you is the starting point of Jesus. Now, did you know that all across all of history, Jesus is consistently praised by believers and non-believers of all stripes as a model of humanity, a life that's been beautifully lived. So why not start with him? Now, for instance, the Quran, Muslims recognize Jesus as a sinless prophet born of a virgin. You go to Hindus, they recognize Jesus as a supreme example. For instance, when Mahatma Gandhi, he was India's favorite son, at his funeral, when he passed away, the Indian government, Hindu, wanted to recognize him and pay him the highest compliment. Do you know how they described him? They said Gandhi was a Christ-like man. That's how they chose to recognize him. Absolutely amazing. Now, if you can search the world and if you can find a higher pattern than Christ, a more consistent character than Christ, and a nobler person than Christ, then by all means, go with my blessing and tell me who that person is. Because I want to know and I want to use that person as a guide to guide me through the various options. But if you can't find a candidate for a better guide, then can I encourage you to start with the person of Jesus? Now, on a lighter note, I look at Jesus' life and I'm pretty sure that he's perfect as an Australian guide. I think he's an Aussie Messiah. Work with me on this. Think about this. He wore thongs. That was his regular getup. Now, his favorite pastime was fishing. Ah, you're starting to see it now. This is very Aussie. And he turned water into wine for some mates who'd already had a few. That's very Australian. Now, I find that he absolutely did an amazing barbecue. I mean, picture that you've got 5,000 people rock up unannounced. And what does he do? He throws a few fresh fish on the barbie, multiplies the buns, and she'll be right. That's fantastic. But you know, the thing that really tips me off is that no one's exactly sure where Jesus' money is coming from, but he's got a mate in the tax office, so it's all sweet. You know, but why start your search with Jesus? I mean, is that just a random choice because I happen to be a Christian? Is that self-serving? I mean, Muhammad, Buddha, Zoroaster, Krishna, Abraham, every religious founder has things that are amazing about them and that are unique in their own right. Just because I worship Christ doesn't mean I need to denigrate the leaders and founders of other religions. I see amazing things in the lives of many of these people, of sacrifice, of compassion, of wisdom. But even in our pluralistic society, Jesus' kind of uniqueness, I think it warrants attention. Let me point out just four things that the religious scholars would agree are unique about the person of Jesus. Whether they're true or not in terms of his actual life, that's for you to judge, but everyone agrees that these are unique as a historical story. First thing, while other guides claim to point us to God, Jesus uniquely claimed to bring God to us, showing us God in the flesh. That's an unprecedented claim. Second thing, while other guides gave pointers for living in a world of evil and suffering, Jesus uniquely dealt with human wickedness by dying on the cross, by giving his life. Third, while other guides suggested how to face death, they all went to the grave. Yet Jesus uniquely is claimed to have broken death as the final barrier. And can I encourage you, if you just go, yeah, great story, resurrection, you know, can I encourage you to actually do some research on this? I've read literally about 10,000 pages of PhD level research on this that in my mind actually back up that it is a warranted claim. One of the best being N.T. Wright, Resurrection of the Son of God. You spend 800 pages with N.T. Wright and you've got some things to answer because he's recognized internationally as the best scholar on this. Now, you can't just dismiss it. To say resurrection can't happen, you're basically making a philosophical presupposition. I do not believe that miracles can happen. And that's begging the question. You've got to deal with the question face on. See, Christianity's rise is built upon numerous, countless encounters with the resurrected Christ. And the last thing there is, while other guides taught us how to live and offered enlightenment through good advice, moral instruction. Jesus uniquely offers good news. He actually gives us his life to live within his followers through his spirit. That's a unique claim. I'll live within you. He offers us power to change. He recognizes our helplessness and our need for grace. As I look at Jesus, I see two things that are radically juxtaposed, that are almost opposites in this one person. On one side, I see that Jesus is the greatest example of humility. I mean, he came to serve, not to be served. He identified with the down and outs. He was enabling the disabled, the poor, the outcast, the women, the oppressed. And the kind of teaching that he gave stops us short, even today, when you hear things like the prodigal son story. Still quoted as so wise. So this humble, wise man, at the same time, made absolutely audacious claims. I mean, picture one of your friends coming out with some of this. I'm the creator of the universe. I'm the living water. I am the true light of the world. I'm the resurrection and the life and the forgiver of sins. And you know, when you get to the end of the universe and everything is judged, I'll be sitting on the throne. What, did you hear that? This guy, he's saying this stuff. Now, anyone else saying that, we'd figure they're smoking something funny or they've lost their sanity. But Jesus doesn't fit the profile. He's the humblest servant of all, model of servant leadership, liberator of the oppressed, a source of wisdom. But he was deadly serious on his claims to greatness. So serious, in fact, that he was killed for them. So I ask, who do you say Jesus is? I don't think there's any more important question. The famous Oxford and Cambridge scholar C.S. Lewis was once a professed atheist and very adamant in his belief, until some of his closest friends, also Oxford dons, like J.R. Tolkien, the writer of Lord of the Rings, they were best friends in a group together called the Inklings. And he challenged Lewis, and a number of them did, and said, have you ever actually really searched this out? He's like, why would I search it out? It's just a bunch of lies. And they're like, do it the justice, search it out. They challenged him. And Lewis, as he explored, discovered that there is no parallel in any other religion, that Jesus, an historical man, claimed to be God. And over time, he became convinced that this is actually true. And he comes to us and challenges us like this. Lewis says, make your choice, but don't come to Jesus with that great patronizing nonsense about his being merely a great human teacher. He hasn't left that option open to you. He didn't intend to. Jesus is unique as a guide through the many religious paths in this world, but don't be fooled. He doesn't claim to offer just one path among many. Instead, he claims to be the door, a safe place and a protection, a true teacher who'll never lead us astray. As we saw on the screen earlier, John 14:6, he's saying, I am the path. I'm the way, the truth, the life. No one gets to the Father apart from me. Exclusive? Absolutely. But is it true? What do you do with that claim? Don't just dismiss it because you think how intolerant, how exclusive, because that does nothing to answer who Jesus actually is and what the truth claim status of this is. Address his claims directly. Now, if you've come here skeptical, if you've come here doubting or non-committed to anything, I don't expect you all of a sudden after this little exploration, when there's so much to read and think about, to suddenly go, yeah, you know, you're right. Jesus is the path and the door. I'd be foolish to believe that that's going to happen in this kind of time frame. You know, that said, I hope that you've seen from the kind of claims that Jesus made and the kind of life that Jesus lived, that he is set quite apart from every other great religious teacher and founder this world has ever seen. How should you choose a religion or none? Can I suggest that there is no better place to begin than to study the person of Jesus and to seriously weigh what he said? Who do you say Jesus is? And don't be hasty in making your decision, because your answer may be the hinge on which your eternity swings. So really, take the time. Weigh it up. As I close this message, let me finish with a clarification and a challenge. First, a clarification. Perhaps you're thinking, this whole process of choosing a religion or none is way too complex for someone like me. I mean, I struggle to read the newspaper, let alone finish a book. And academia leaves me entirely cold. I don't really want a reason, I want a relationship. I mean, I want intimacy and connection with it, with whatever that something or perhaps someone is who lies behind the beauty of a sunset, the passion of a lover's embrace, the wonder of a newborn child. And you know, I think Jesus meets you at that point, perhaps even better than he meets you at the point of being the so-called objective seeker. Because what I find is that this is not meant to be an excuse for laziness, but did you know the greatest story of search? It's not you searching for God. The greatest story of search is actually a loving God who comes looking for his lost humanity, his kids, and says, come back home. And you know, that's why I know that if you search with your whole heart and you find Christ, that you'll realize all the while, he was seeking you. God was chasing you. Jesus is God's chase effort across the whole cosmos. It's an amazing story. Jesus is knocking on your door. Seek and you'll find. And this process, it's not cold and calculating like solving a maths equation. And isn't that good to know? See, this process, no, you see, it's passionate. It's full of desire. It's a call to experience. Taste and see that God is good. Have you tasted? Or are you sitting back saying, prove it, and then I'll step forward? No, step forward and live what Jesus taught. Pray to him. Ask if he's real, that he'd show himself to you. Position yourself so that if he is there, then follow his word and don't expect him to meet you on your terms. Meet him on his terms. He says, seek and you'll find. If you haven't sought, then don't reject as untrue that which you've never experienced. Don't. There's too much riding on this. Which brings me to the challenge. What next step will you take in your own search? Can I commend to you the starting point of Jesus? You know, from my own search, I've found that Jesus' life and his teachings, they cohere. The way he says to live and the way he taught, it corresponds to the way the universe really is. And as I live it, I find that Jesus offers holistic salvation that draws me into life to the full, not distracts me from it. I've always been one of those annoying why kind of people. You know, the two-year-old kids growing up, why, you know, it's like, I've always been that, but I've really genuinely searched for what makes sense of the universe and what makes sense of my life. And as I've searched, what I've found is that in Jesus, I find the logic of God that brought the world into motion and that makes science tick. And in Jesus, I've not only found the answer to science and logic, but I found the answer to love, the greatest expression of love, that while I was at my worst, Jesus came and died for me. Have you met him? Have you met him? It's premature to call for a commitment. But my challenge is simply this. After the service, whether you're questioning, kind of feel like you're losing your faith, or maybe you're an agnostic who's seeking, or maybe you've made excuses up to this point of why I don't need to seek, and there's always higher priorities. I'm too busy with work. I've got other things to do. It really doesn't matter, and they're probably all the same anyway. You use some of these? If this is you, then can I encourage you to come and search. Start searching today. You know, there is no greater truth to find, no greater prize to secure, no greater deed to accomplish than to know God and to enter through the door of Christ. We've got a number of resources up here that'll help you start to engage that search. And I spend hours each week just sitting down and dialoguing with people in an open way. Because this isn't a dogmatic club where we say believe or else. This is a group of people who are meeting with the person of Jesus, and who the more we search it out, the more we find that this actually makes sense and it's livable and it brings life. So don't put it off. All of our leaders are open to meeting with you, to dialoguing, to talking about it. But you know, the greatest resource that I can offer you, it's not the Logos team afterwards answering a question. It's not me giving you a book or a DVD. The greatest resource I can offer you is God himself. You know, if God doesn't exist, then when you pray to him, as I'm going to encourage you to do in a moment, when you pray to him, if he doesn't exist, what is it? It's just words falling to the ground, like probably 3/4 of your words do every day anyway. Just guff. But if God is really there, if Jesus is really the path to God, his God himself, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, that this divine relationship of love, if he is really there, then you have no greater resource than to just take the risk and to step out and say, Jesus, if you are the path to the Father, show me. I'll put in my side of trying to search, but I pray you would meet me and give me eyes to see. So as I close now, there's a prayer that's written in your note outline. It's also going to be on the screen. And if you already know God, great, but can I encourage you, continue searching. If not for your own benefit, then for the benefit of your friends and family who maybe don't know God and believe in Jesus as you do. But if you are confused in your faith, or if you are agnostic in this or committed to some other system, perhaps right now you'd be willing to pray this with me. Let's pray. Jesus, right now I'm pretty confused. It's beyond me to navigate this labyrinth of paths, but if you're there, I need your help. Would you guide me now? Would you show up and give me eyes to see the way to life? Show me the next steps to take so that I might find the right door that leads to God. And above all, would you give me a heart to respond to your advances in love as you search for me? Amen.